is 7 o'clock on April 13th, 2017. I'm calling to order the Papio Missouri River Natural Resources Board of Directors meeting. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
A copy of the Nebraska Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414, is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce the procedures that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will hear the subcommittee chairperson's report and their proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to address the board chairman. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. All questions and comments will be addressed to the board chair. We ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion or actions. Thank you. With that, quorum call, please.
Bradley.
Here.
Fred Conley.
Here.
John Conley.
Here.
Fowler.
Here.
Brenholz.
Here.
Jeff.
Here.
Leahy. Caesar.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Here.
Here. And just a note, Director Leahy will be about 30 minutes or so late this evening. He will be joining us. agenda item number 4, adoption of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call on the motion.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Brenwald.
Yes.
Jeff.
Yes.
Peter.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Parker. Yes. Agenda item 5, adoption of the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call on the motion, please.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Brenwald.
Yes.
Jeff.
Yes.
Leahy. Sorry.
Peter.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Reese.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
Parker.
Yes. I have the proof of publication. The affidavit will become part of the permanent record for this evening's meeting. With that, moving on to agenda item number 8, agency and association reports and presentations. Tonight, we just have a written report from our Natural Resource Conservation Service Director, Neil Jensen. Moving on to 8B, Nebraska Association of Resource Districts, Rich Teaser.
No report.
Short and sweet.
Nothing
right now. Rolling right along to 8C, legislative report, Hush Blackwell.
Thank you, Directors. Tim Gay with Hush Blackwell. These were handed out and be on the screen, but I really don't have a whole lot of changes to go over on this because it hasn't changed a lot. simple as that. But anyway, Natural Resources, as we talked to you earlier, didn't have that many bills this year sent to them. They finished up fairly early. Contentious bills were on energy policy. There's a lot of those, public power and how to look at that. And then they had just a few other things, but nothing super major. The list, like I say, is the same. So there really hasn't been hardly any bills out on the floor from the Natural Resources Committee yet. What they're going to do is probably have just one committee bill and put 4, 5, 6 bills in there and just right past that on some day. They went over the agenda today. What's really taking up the legislature's time right now is taxes and property taxes, income taxes, the things you read about in the paper, school funding, and then the budget. And the budget with the shortfall, the main thing we're watching is water sustainability funds in that budget. So far, so good. I don't want to go further than that, but that's kind of where we're at. Right now, they're in the last week of the budget this week and even probably into next week, probably only like Tuesday or Wednesday, they're going to do the budget and fine-tune it. They'll print it, set it out on Friday. They're going to review it on the 24th. They'll have a presentation Friday. We'll see it probably Thursday. And then they're going to start debating it the 24th and 25th. So that's 2 weeks from now. Next week will be all tax issues. And it'll be property tax issues, income taxes, and school funding. So after today was the Sarpy County sewer bill, and it kind of got out of hand as far as some of the urban versus rural, some of the urban or rural people were, well, why are we doing this for Omaha? And, you know, just a shot across the bow, I think, for what's to come on those splits. So anyway, next week could be very contentious. We shall see what happens. The only thing on that, the Water Sustainability Fund really covers everybody, so that's a good thing. It is one of those true funds that kind of everybody gets to use and benefits from. So be looking for that. We're working last month. I told you we're trying to get General Manager Winkler and myself and Ron and Steve, whoever wants to come to some lunches. That's been more difficult than expected just because every day there's something going on. The, you know, whatever group is having their get together. So it's been hard to pull senators off, and they had those committees that were going on. So we're still going to do that. I think there's a good time coming up. We don't want to rush into it as far as getting rushed with the senator. We actually want to sit down with them where we can have a nice meal and talk about just our issue instead of all the other stuff going on. So it's an educational, but that's on our agenda. We're looking for that. That could, hopefully we'll get some more of those coming. John's been to a couple fundraisers. We do a lot of the fundraisers. Pop in for lunch, but we really don't get it. It's more of a keeping his face in front of people, but not a chance to really talk to people. But that's under Hush Blackwell does a lot of those, and then we invite a client usually, so it's not your funds doing that per se. I don't know, on the Sarpy County sewer bill, I know you guys are probably going to be watching that as you go forward if that passes today. Like I say, it passed on general file, where it takes a comprehensive sewer system and the interlocals, and there's still work to be done on that, on the interlocals, but I'm sure you'll be following it. I think that's sailing along fairly well, so we'll go from there. But other than that, not a ton of things going on. If there's any something you saw on the list that I can try to answer, more than happy to answer any questions or any other topic.
Any questions from directors? Thank you, Tim.
Hopefully it'll be more exciting next time. Or maybe not. And the funds will just stay in there and we're all good.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Yep.
Next up is 8D, the Sarpy County Aquifer Mapping. Jim Cania, if I pronounce that right, and Paul Woodward.
You did great.
Thanks. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for having us tonight.
Good evening. Paul Woodward. I'm the groundwater management engineer. And our main presenter tonight is going to be Jim Cania. He was the lead geologist with Aqua Geo Frameworks that worked on our project and several others throughout the state that involved aerial surveying of, in our case, Western Sarpy County. So we want to give you a good overview tonight to touch on really the reasons for this study, how we did it, and Jim was involved in every step along the process, kind of why it works, and then, you know, the results we got and what are we going to use it for. So that's probably the important part. Some of our questions going into this process and why we specifically selected this area to look at the geology. One, we knew there was a shallow Dakota aquifer, but we didn't know if it was isolated, if it was connected to different things. We didn't know how much groundwater was essentially available, so there's a question there of quantity for people to use. There was also a question of water quality, and we had several results of higher nitrates in different areas, but they didn't always make sense or correlate to each other. So this is a kind of a way to help us construct a puzzle that we'll be able to figure out. And then what areas, as you get closer to the surface, what are the other areas that have higher potential recharge? So getting water down, that's good. We can also get other things into the groundwater that's not so good. Last year, this is an overall map of the NRA area, the six NRDs that are working together. Everything in green on that map is what was flown before. So that was done in 2014, 2015. And then some of these areas in red were actually done as the pilot studies that we've seen. So anything in white or light gray is what was added last year based on the grants available from the Water Sustainability Fund. Some NRDs were able to spread it out. Others had specific areas of interest that they wanted to see. And ours is this Southern Sarpy County area there. So a little more detailed look about the wells and the geology that we kind of knew was in the area, but we were looking to really get an accurate map of is shown here. It's about 130 square miles. Flew about 600 line miles. And you actually see when Jim goes through the presentation, because of some cost savings with all the NRDs working together, we were able to actually add a few miles around the Gretna area to give us a better tie-in to that area as well. So we were able to do more with what we had. So total cost of the project was $400,000, of which we have actually submitted and already received our water sustainability funding. So with that, Jim's going to go through the process.
Thanks, Paul. One of the things, this is on behalf of my other two team members at AGF. We're a small company, but we've been working in Nebraska since, well, for me, 1987, when I worked at the North Platte NRD. Some of you that have been on the board a while may remember the Ashland survey that we did in 2007, and I came up when I was at the USGS and presented the results of that survey. This is a little bit different. It's a deeper system as far as depth of investigation. It was designed specifically and selected for this particular study. And we spent a lot of time working with Paul and others at CSD to make sure we selected the right tool for the job. AEM fundamentals. AEM is airborne electromagnetics. It's a fancy name for basically a system that sends a signal into the ground. It energizes the rocks, and the rocks then send another signal back. And we'll go through that in just a second. But the important part is it's no trespass. It's very fast. It flies above the ground. We did 600 line kilometers in 4 days. Overall, for the water sustainability funds and the ET funds, we did 9,000 kilometers in 28 days in Nebraska last year. So that's a pretty fair amount of work in a short period of time. Now, it takes a lot longer to write the reports and do everything else, and we'll go through that in a second. But the more important thing is it's economical. If you did it on a per acre cost, it's approximately $9 an acre to get this done. You cannot drill wells, and I used to work for Conservation and Survey Division. You can't even come close to doing this kind of investigation with well drilling. So how does this work? Basically, it's a sling load, and make sure I'm doing the right button. What you see is that big hoop on the bottom. What that is just a platform that carries a wraps of wire around it that are energized, that turns on and turns off extremely fast, 25 milliseconds. And so it pumps that signal down into the rocks. For this study, it was approximately 900 feet in places, but averaged somewhere in the neighborhood of about 600 to 700 feet. It has to do with the electrical conductivity of the rocks that it goes through, and also whether the water is fresh or salty. Luckily, in this survey, it was all fresh where we were doing the work. So the important part here is to map a contrast in the physical properties. And in this particular use, it is the electrical resistivity of the rocks. If any of you have been out with a well driller, they take an electric borehole log of the well, and that tells you whether the log is the aquifer materials or the geologic materials are resistive, like a sandstone or a gravel, or conductive, like a shale and a clay. So looking at this particular graph, and this is where the rubber meets the road when you're trying to interpret these things, there are many different solutions. There's not one set solution for each resistivity value that we collect by the system. You have to have knowledge of the area. You have to understand the geology and the chemistry of the water. You have to understand how the system works. So we put all that together, but the important part is we want to know where there's conductive materials at depth versus resistive materials at depth. And again, conductive materials are shales and clay, salt water, or it's resistive sand, gravel, sandstone, or limestone. So one of the big things is this thing loves metal. If you fly over a power line, it sees it real well, and that's all it sees. If you fly over a pipeline, the same way. We spent a couple weeks doing the flight planning for each particular project, for all of the projects for Nebraska last year. And we looked at things like where the we got the power lines. We also investigated on Google Earth, flight line by flight line. We also had all the pipeline coverages. Then we looked for dwellings. You may not fly over a house or a dwelling. You don't fly over confined animal feeding operations. The other things are is you shall not fly over the interstate. And we found that out in 2007 when we did that study. So between all that, we were ready to go in on June 15th for all of the areas, and we let out a contract to cover them all. And as Paul said, we negotiated a very good price with the geophysical equipment vendor, which allowed us to fly more line miles for each NRD. So how does this work? We get 2 to 3 flights a day. We start in the morning and we fly until we can't fly anymore. It has to be visual flight rules. The wind has to be a certain velocity. We were very lucky. We had no weather days except for the very last day of the survey at Lower Platte South, and we were down for half a day before we completed the entire project. We were generally collect 300 to 450 line kilometers. It depends on the pilot. All of these flights are between 100 and 150 feet off the ground at approximately 40 to 50 miles an hour. What you end up with is every 2.5 to 3 meters, you get a sounding. And you knit all those soundings together to get the images I'm going to show you in a second. So the schedule was for the Papio Missouri River NRD was we started on July 28th. We finished on August 2nd. And we had really good weather, so it went very well. And, of course, in this case, it was me this time. I was on the ground in the field for every one of these surveys, starting in Ogallala, finishing in Lower Platte South. So here's an example of the flight lines. So you see they're not straight. I mean, ideally, we'd like to go straight. But you have to fly around cell phone towers, towns. You'll see confined feeding operations, little subdivisions. You end up with this patchwork of squiggly lines. But that means that the data that you collected is mostly useful. I think we only lost about 4 to 5% of the data we collected for unseen things. So we collected data where we could get data. We didn't just fly down a power line and say, oh, well, we didn't get anything there. That's not what we do. We make sure that the money you're spending is collecting data. And the report is big. So Paul's been wading through it, but you'll find things like this, which flight line it is and when was it flown. So all of that type of information is in there. So we QAQC, quality control, and assure that all the data we collect is correct. This is a full-time job. One person in the field, two guys in the office. We collect the data, ship it to Denmark, because that happened to be where the vendor is located. They give us a data set back by 6 o'clock in the morning, and the guys are already inverting it and looking to make sure that all the data is usable for the purpose that we collected it for, in this case, aquifer mapping for the Sarpy County area. It's a continuous process until it's done, and the reason we have to do this is we will not release the helicopter till we're sure the data is completely usable. So you get what you pay for. So this is the science end of it. I am not a geophysicist. I'm a hydrogeologist. I look at this. My two partners are research-grade geophysicists. They can look at it and tell you what it means. I barely can tell you what it means. To me, it's a lot of squiggly lines. The important part here, though, is there's these dropouts where it's decoupled. That's where we were flying across a county road, and there'd be an electrical line there. So that data is probably dropped out for that purpose. So, but everything is known on that system. There's XY tilt meters, there's inertial navigation, there's laser altimeters, two GPS altimeters. We know all of the different time gates and how the system is performing. We know the voltages and currents that are going through the loop, and we're understanding how the receiver is getting the data. So my partners look at this, and they determine within 24 hours looking at this stuff, Number one, is this good data or can we use it or does it have to be reflown? So you take this and you invert the data. This is a mathematical process that uses some programs that are written specifically for this system. And you end up with these color bands of resistivity. Where it's resistive, it's red. Where it's blue, it's conductive. And the important part of this slide is this is an area where data is cut out, where the white zones are. And as a geologist, you look at this, and this makes no sense, but we will interpret across here and make this one clay lens eventually. And we'll show you the interpreted sections in a second. Supporting data. Airborne geophysics or any geophysics does not stand by itself. We use all of the borehole logs. We use all the surface geology reports. We use all the subsurface geology reports. It is all in the reference part of the document that we gave to the NRD. In this case, 922 DNR holes were looked at and used as part of our interpretation, and there was 18 Conservation and Survey Division test hole logs in this area. We use everything we can. And why do you do this? This is an example from 2007, and I like using this because it shows the purpose of doing this work. This is western Nebraska. This is approximately 6 miles from my home. This is the North Platte River right here, and this is the Brule Formation. And when I was one of the modelers for the Cooperative Hydrology Study, we had a groundwater model that would fail to converge regularly. And part of it was is the geometry of the subsurface was incorrect. So we drilled a lot of holes, over 400 sites in the North Platte Valley at great expense. So the original line that I drew for bedrock is the black line here. This would be the Brule Formation. This is where the bottom of the aquifer is. This is bedrock. So this is my original line. After we flew it with AEM, the brown line shows the subsurface topography, if you will, of the Brule Formation as it actually is. There is a substantial difference between the two. We ended up finding, if I remember the report correctly, it's 10 years ago now, approximately 2 million acre feet more in storage in the North Platte River Basin where we flew than prior to that. And this was maps that I drew personally based off borehole logs. So it shows the utility in doing this. It also shows an area up here where they could actually use Interstate Canal, which is right here, to do additional managed aquifer recharge. So that's the reasoning for using AM. Let's look at some of the actual results from your project. So we have three separate presentations on this slide, and this is what it looks like in the report. So you have where you're at on the planet's surface. This is the USGS topography map. Then we have a profile of the resistivity with the initial interpretation. So Q is quaternary, whether it's alluvial or glacial sediment. KD is the Dakota Formation, and IP is the Pennsylvanian. So when you take this, do the interpretation, you come up with a slide. You look good, by the way, with it on. But you come up with the slide on the bottom, which is really the important thing that's useful to you as groundwater managers. So the Q has four breakdowns of aquifer material. It's either non-aquifer material, which is the blues, marginal aquifer material, which is this tan color here where the Q is, aquifer material, which is sands, they're yellow, and then coarse aquifer material where you'd get a very good high-capacity well. So it's broken down by those resistivity maps, which are compared to all the lithology logs. So you get this interpreted cross-section. By the way, here's the boreholes that are part of the map. So everything has a touchstone in reality. This isn't done by itself. I can't emphasize that enough. Lastly, we put the 1995 water table map from CSD in there. And so the other thing that's important is the Dakota is broken up into shales, which is dark green, or this lighter green, which is sandstones. So we want to know how much material there is that's aquifer material in the Dakota, as well as the quaternary, and whether it's saturated. So here's another interpreted section. Also, these are all in the report. As you go from east to west, this is the Platte River over here. You come through here, you see a lot of glacial till. That's why you see non-aquifer and marginal aquifer material mixed in with aquifer material. And as it goes along, you can see most of it where the water table is right here. Most of the Quaternary is not saturated until you get down into the Platte River Plain. The other thing is how is this hydrologically connected? In this area, where it's light green, all of the Dakota is hydrologically connected until it hits a boundary like the shale. So this tells us what is its contribution to a stream. You have to look at each individual profile to look at the entire area because it changes from line to line to line. So you knit them all together and get a fence diagram. These are all the different profiles. So over here, you have Dakota aquifer under the Platte River system. This is towards the Ashland area. You can see that there's Quaternary aquifer material, the yellow and coarse aquifer material sitting right on the Dakota. There's hydrologic connection between the two. The other thing is, as you come back from the floodplain, you can see the yellow goes back into this system on different lines. There is a hydrologic connection that goes back underneath the hills by Gretna. So if you have wells in here that are hydrologically connected to stream, as far as your lower Platte corridor management goes, this is of concern to you. And you know where it is connected and where it isn't. The other thing that's on this map is this real faint line that goes around here. This is all glacial material. It's all recent. And again, the Platte River comes around the corner and goes to the east. Look at all the coarse material where the Lincoln Wellfield is and other wells in the area. This is good aquifer, but it is thin. So remember the drought when I was at USGS and Lincoln was jumping up and down. They didn't have enough water, which was true. They were hitting these coarse aquifers very hard, with no surface water coming in to recharge those wells. That was the real dilemma for them. So,
show the isolation real quick.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
What we were also able to show this is showing this eroded channel. So basically, we were able to investigate. Just imagine this is I-80 on the ground. But even though we couldn't fly over it, we got very good results that showed that the Dakota had completely been eroded away through this area. So we do in pretty much have an isolated Dakota aquifer section down here.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul.
Yep.
And we do not know how far north this extends because we just didn't collect any additional data past this point. So again, this is important to know. This is pretty much an isolated area. Thank you, Paul. So Cretaceous Dakota thickness. This is all of the Dakota. Again, it shows those two little islands. The lighter colors are the thickest parts. The blue colors are the thinnest. Again, you can see this region where the Dakota was eroded into and no longer exists. Now, Cretaceous Dakota thickness that is saturated. So now you're looking at the sandstone. We are not looking at the shales. This is all the Dakota that you have in these areas that has water in it. This is below the water table and above the Pennsylvania limestone bedrock. So this is a different view of these things. So you're only looking at saturated aquifer connections. So in this area, you have a direct connection between the aquifer material of the Quaternary with the Dakota underneath, the Dakota aquifer. In other areas, like up in here, there's a big connection between the Dakota and the Platte River floodplain. But as you come down around this corner, that changes in places. So you'd have to look at the map. There's numerous maps in the reports from all sorts of different angles. So I invite you, if that's your interest, to take a look at that. But we have it really well quantified. As a matter of fact, if you want to know what your groundwater in storage is, for the shales and clays, we calculate everything. And the amount of water that's in the shale and clay is a lot, but shales and clays won't release the water to a well. It stays there. So it's a fair amount. There's approximately 1 million, 1.4 million groundwater in there. There's in volume, the amount of storage, groundwater and storage, is about 500,000. The extractable volume out of 500,000 is 11,000 acre feet. So it's next to nothing. When you look at the sandstone sand in the Dakota, it's about 2 million acre feet in volume. There's about 754,000 available in the groundwater storage. And then the specific yield tells us you can get about 40,000 acre feet out of that sandstone. Lastly, the aquifer volume for the total of the system, you're going to have about 48,000 acre feet that's available at any one time. So lastly, we were charged with looking at the recharge areas to understand water quality issues and how much recharge is going to come back into the aquifer. The yellow and brown, this is the first 10 feet that we mapped from the surface downward. You can see right here, the browns and yellows, you're going to get a maximum amount of recharge through that. The marginal aquifer material, which is tan, and the non-aquifer material, which is blue, it's going to run off or it's going to pool up, but it's not necessarily going to soak in. So if you just want to see where the recharge areas are without the non-aquifer material, marginal aquifer material, here's your map. And it's mostly to the south and west that this works. And of course, the floodplain is where the majority of that works. So all of this is available in the paper report, but also we developed a Google Earth product. And you can go, well, is it online yet? Did Katie get it up?
It's all officially online, yep.
Okay. So, well, why don't you talk about that real quick?
Okay.
So everybody knows where to go.
NRA.org is the location where all the data is stored. In Google Earth, what you would be able to do is when you click on one of these lines, you would also be able to click this profile. And so it would pull up an image just like Jim was looking at and show you what that profile looks like for that specific area. So you could do that for any line you want. Very quick way of looking at that. There's also some of these shaded maps that Jim has produced that are available in Google Earth too that you can download.
And the important part is, say your farm is, or your community is by Springfield, you click on that, it tells you right underneath where you click what the thickness is, the saturated thickness, depth to water, all of that information comes up in that pop-up menu. So you can just click along a flight line and you can see how it changes. And like Paul said, you can bring up the images that go with it.
Or you're a new homeowner or well driller going out there, you're like, well, how deep am I going to have to drill? What's it going to cost me? I know that now. So a little bit on the report schedule meeting.
Yeah, I'll just go through it real quickly. Bazile Creek was the first report done. These were done by order of which the NRD signed up for the projects. So Bazile Creek was first. We finished that on January 10th. It was 4 weeks early. Your report was done on March 1st, which is approximately 3 weeks early. We just turned in the lower loop, and it was only a week early. We're getting wore out. No, that's not true. It's just been busy. And so the rest of the reports, as you can see, the last one is due is the Central Plat, Twin Plat, and the PRIP report, which is due December 30th. So we're writing these reports all this year, as well as doing additional data collection for other projects. Go ahead.
Okay, so we've got all this great data. What are we going to use it for? We mentioned some of the information for landowners and well drillers. One of the things, the 95 water table that you saw on those maps and that was used to do those calculations, probably isn't real accurate as you get up into the hills, because honestly, even the NRD hasn't taken water levels in that area previously. So we don't have like a good understanding of what the actual water level is within those different formations that we talked about. So we're looking to improve that by going and looking at the wells that are available now, which ones will tell us what we want to know where the water table's at, so we can pick those wells out. We can also pick out wells now that, you know, some places we've gotten issues with nitrates and water quality. We can now go pick specific other wells and their depth, and we know exactly where they sit in the aquifer. So we'll be able to prepare a much better sampling plan for that area. provide this info to the communities to update their wellhead protection area plans. So this becomes a service as part of our groundwater management plan as well. Any other selections, things we need to, places we need to clarify, we can go do additional test holes, kind of check what we really have down there. I did a check without Jim knowing, and I didn't know how well it would work together here, but I've had a picture a long time of the geologic display out at Schramm State or Schramm State Recreation Area. And this is one of the places you're able to see how good Jim did, because you can actually see it with your own eyes, what it comes out to. But it really is, seems to be very, like if this part, basically in this display, this part is gone, whatever loss was overlying the rest of the hill. So you see the outcroppings of, sure enough, the sandstone, and then shale beneath that, and then you get to the limestone. So that seemed to fit really well, and was a good check. And you know, these maps will be good for potentially even talking to Game and Parks, informational displays. Mr. Schramm was a state geologist or a professor at the university for a long time. So as they redo the aquarium there and have rotating displays, we might be able to have a more detailed geologic educational display with these results shown in it. So with that, I know we've ran a little long, but any questions you guys have?
Going back to that graph with available water, was it
the table?
Yep. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, 48,950 acre feet.
Yes.
Available. I find that interesting. As a comparison, Lake McConaughey Pool holds 1,750,000 acre feet. And so here we're dealing with 40, you know, so we're just, it's, you know, not really big, is it?
It's not real big. But for that domestic well owner that's out there, it's vital. I mean, the important part here is on that last line, you never, ever get all the water out of an aquifer. That's why it's called a specific yield. It drains by gravity. And so that's the number that we've used for years at the USGS and everywhere else, Conservation Survey, when I worked there also. So the number next to it is much bigger. If you look at the storage volume for everything, we're at 1.3 million acre feet, which is not that far from Lake McConaughey.
Yeah.
But because of the groundwater and the way it moves through the rocks, it can't drain it all. So that's one of the ways to look at it.
Thank you.
So management-wise, what we might do is, you know, where we took this part off, we know these parts of the aquifer, kind of the water table height, or the topography, if you thought about water table contours, they basically follow the contours of the land in this case. So there's kind of a high point right through here. And so groundwater is kind of falling down Buffalo Creek and Springfield Creek. So in reality, we probably shouldn't have a lot of irrigation wells in this upper part because they're not going to get as much recharge. Now, that 48,000 acre feet might get enough recharge down in this area to support an irrigation well in the long term. But that's one of the ways we could kind of break this up and be better descriptive about what we have.
Is that 48,000, that's a static number?
No, that's at this particular moment in time that we measured it. So if the water table would rise, there'd be more water. If it declines like the drought we had not that long ago, there's less. It's similar to what the town of Clarkson went through. They had lots of water until it hit in 2012, right? Then we went up and mapped with the airborne for them and gave them similar numbers. And sure as heck, that's what happened. They went in and pumped everything they had because they had no rainfall. They dewatered, in their case, their number of available supply. And at that meeting, it was really instructive because we had a town hall meeting when we gave the report. And one of the people in the crowd said, "Well, where's our wells now?" We showed them on the map. And they were right on the edge of the aquifer. It wasn't even the thick part. So they followed up with, "Well, why didn't you drill them in the deep part?" Well, they didn't have this information at that time. So, you know, this is one of those useful things of having this information. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, what you just said is, on average, we've got 49,000 available, plus or minus whatever the weather.
Yeah, that's not taking into account lateral flow that might come from the surrounding area, et cetera. It's what it is as a static block with that water table.
Snapshot in time.
Dr. Thompson.
Yes. You mentioned the Lincoln well fields, and this touched part of it, but it's further east, is that correct?
It'd be, go ahead.
So it did just get to the edge of Lincoln's well field to be basically touching this coarse material right through here. And so, yeah, we basically mapped out to the river, and in actually our IMP, Lincoln's wells in the middle of the river happened to fall on our side of the county line. Right. So they're in there.
The Water Sustainability Fund gave $7 million to drill horizontally in addition to the vertical wells they have. Will this technology be used to help them find where they're going to go underground?
I think they've got that pretty well mapped. As you get out here in the Platte River alluvial aquifer, it really doesn't change that much. So we've got quite a bit of sand and gravel out there. This tells them where it's coarser or where it's not, so that might be beneficial.
Yeah. In the report, there's a map of just the coarse aquifer material only. And right now, the yellow, the aquifer material, which is finer grain, is masking the coarse underneath. So there's a series of maps in there breaking everything down into its own components. So that might help better answer your question if you have a moment to look at the report, or maybe I'll give Paul some work.
I'll certainly provide it to Lincoln to work with them.
Yeah. George Bradley.
Yeah, I think that was part of my question. If the Dakota Sandstone acted as an aquitard or a capstone, if there was water even underneath that.
Underneath. Now, please repeat your question. I'm hard of hearing, and I apologize.
The Dakota Sandstone, if that acted as an aquitard or a capstone, sort of, so the water won't.
The Dakota Shale acts that way. The sandstone's actually the aquifer part of it. And it is less transmissive than the Quaternary coarse aquifer or the aquifer material of the sand and gravels that are in the Platte River or in the glacial sediments. So there's, as a matter of fact, it's quite a bit different because the sandstone is cemented, so that it's a resistor to groundwater flow, but it still flows through there. But the shale is an aquiclude. It will not let water go.
Then my other question was the Vados zone, mm-hmm. as I understand, where you can determine pollutants in that area. Can you determine perhaps where the most polluted right parts of this?
Right there. Yes. One of the things that you can look at, you can see the water table right here. So the Vados zone that you're talking about right now is the air-water mixed zone where the water by gravity is falling down to the water table. So in an area like this, it's all aquifer material and it's all the way to the surface. The Vados zone would be the distance from the land surface down to the water table down here. So what happens along the way with the Vados zone, and that's a whole talk unto itself, water can still evaporate out of there. The other thing is capillary action holds the water in place. So depending on the transmissivity of that formation, it's either a fast recharge like it would be here, or ultimately a very slow recharge in the marginal aquifer areas. So if you were concerned about nitrates, marginal aquifer and non-aquifer, we talked about this at Basilic Break, those lands that they have there, management for nitrogen is not going to be their best beneficial use of their management funds. But here, where you're applying nitrogen and it has a fast path to the water table, this is where you're going to want to do the management.
So the study I mentioned there in the last slide, if there was a Vados zone study, what we typically do is find these higher recharge areas, just drill, get borings and samples back of the soil through this particular area here, and then say, and sometimes they see a lens of higher nitrates or You know, so you kind of see the pattern of, is a contaminant making its way down to the water table? And that way you could kind of say, well, is my trend going to get worse or is it going to get better, depending on how much I still have coming down to the groundwater? So that's one of the kind of studies we could do now, because we have a good idea of where to do it at.
Did that answer your question?
Well, it sure did, and it sort of opened up the door for a whole bunch more.
Right. Anytime. Paul's available.
Any other questions from directors? Thank you so much, John.
Thank you very much for the work, and we really appreciate coming to present tonight. Thank you.
Moving on to subcommittee reports, and please let the record reflect that Director Leahy is now with us. Moving on to 9A, Finance, Expenditure, and Legal Subcommittee, Director Rich Teaser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Be it resolved, the minutes of the April 11, 2017 meeting of the FEL Subcommittee are hereby accepted and incorporated into these minutes, and the following recommendations of the subcommittee are hereby adopted and approved. One, refinancing of flood protection and water quality enhancement bonds, series 2013. Recommendation that the board authorize financing of the 2013 series flood control and water quality enhancement bonds, and the following resolution be adopted. Now, if you want to stay here for another 3 hours, I'll read all 26 pages, but I'm assuming you don't, so I'll move adoption.
So, yeah, we have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Director Thompson.
Thank you. I'd just like to commend the general manager and the bonding company for their diligence in helping us save taxpayer dollars. So I really do appreciate the work they put into this.
Thank you. Any further comments from directors? Director?
Yeah, I just had a question for clarification purposes. When these new bonds are issued, are they going to be, they've been paid on for a few years, correct? Mm-hmm. So when they're reissued, will they be the original long term or will they be the shorter term?
The term doesn't change.
So it remains?
It remains the whatever's left on them, I guess.
Whatever's left on them, is that right? So in other words, and just for example, if they were 20-year bonds to start with and we've been paying for 5 years, now they're still going to be 15-year bonds, or they go back to the original 20-year bond?
Yeah, Paul Grieger with D.A. Davidson, I understand your question. The final maturity of the bonds will not change. All we're doing is swapping out the maturities with different interest rates.
The maturity date stays the same for the
correct.
New bonds.
Correct. Yeah, we're not extending the average life of the bonds. That's how
so basically, we're looking to lower the interest rate.
We're lowering the interest rate and keeping on the exact same payment schedule.
Thank you. Any further questions from directors? And just a clarification, we do need 8 votes for this to pass. And along those lines, I do want to reflect and appreciate Director Thompson's comments of the work that staff has done with this to save the district money. It is greatly appreciated. With that, roll call on the motion.
Fowler.
Yes.
Redwall.
No.
Yeah.
Yes.
Lane.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Weiss.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
And Chair Thurston.
Yes.
Thanks, Jim. Number two, transfer of funds from account 0104-505-4110, Pigeon Creek Special Watershed, to account 0104-507-4195, Conservation Assistance Program. Recommendation that the GM be authorized to transfer $118,000 from the Pigeon Creek Special Watershed account 0104-505-4410 to the Conservation Assistance Program account 0104-507-4195 in the FY 2017 budget, and that account 0104-507-4195 be allowed to exceed 110% of the budget amount with a maximum not to exceed of $888,000 without further board approval. I so move.
And once again, I have a motion on the table. Is there anybody in the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Reinhold.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Lady.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Weiss.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Clippers.
Yes.
That concludes my report, Mr. Chair.
Thank Thank you, Director Teaser. Moving on to 9B, Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee, Director John Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Be it resolved that the minutes of the April 11, 2017 meeting of the Programs, Projects, and Operations Subcommittee are accepted, incorporated in these minutes, and the following recommendations of the subcommittee are hereby adopted and approved. Number one, amendment to Zirinsky Basin 2 professional service contract with HDR Engineering, Inc. Subcommittee recommends the general manager be authorized to execute an amendment to the professional service agreement with HDR Engineering, Inc. for the Zirinsky Water Quality Basin Number 2 project in a not-to-exceed amount of $858,930, bringing the total contract not-to-exceed amount to $1,279,660, subject to changes deemed necessary by general manager and approval as to form by district legal counsel, and I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody in the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Yeah.
Yes.
Lightning.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yeah.
Thompson.
Yes.
Weiss.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Aye. John Thompson.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Brunwell.
No.
And Chairperson.
Yes.
Item number two, Erickson Construction Company change order for Washington County Rural Water Lakeland Extension. Subcommittee recommends the general manager be authorized to execute a change order with Erickson Construction for the construction of the Washington County Rural Water Lakeland Connection Project in a not-to-exceed amount of $80,286.10, bringing the total contract not-to-exceed amount to $306,648.85, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approval as to form by district legal counsel, and I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody in the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Director Leahy.
To borrow from my good friend, Director Thompson, you're allowing me to get on my soapbox a couple of times this evening. I appreciate the staff getting us that additional information regarding this agenda item. It was really helpful, especially all the back and or the previous bid information. But something still doesn't sit right with me about the manner in which this company sort of went about this, where they're trying to get $40,000 more, and credit to the staff for negotiating that down to this level. And everything that I read, all right, I'm not going to vote against this particular extension of going over the 110%. But it's concerning of the next time Erickson Construction Company is looking for business, that I will remember, and I hope the rest of the board does remember, that they were trying to get a certain amount, and either A, they knew that they were wrong when staff pointed it out, and that's why we were able to get it down to 40,000, or they were very charitable to just say, oh yeah, no, we're going to give you that extra $40,000. So that's just my piece on that, and I'm off my soapbox for now.
Thank you, Director Leahy. Any further questions or comments from directors? Director Jeff.
Yeah, I agree with Director Leahy on that. I think that's a good assessment of the situation. However, I think part of the problem we're dealing with is just the fact that it was a little bit of our own board's fault for not having it voted in a timely fashion, which kind of ran to some over. But I certainly agree with what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any further comments from directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Brunwell.
Yes.
Jeff.
Yes.
And
Shepherdson. Yes.
Item three are bids for Little Papio Channel, Maple to Pacific to Pratt Street, Keystone Trail Stabilization Project. Subcommittee recommends that the general manager be authorized to execute a contract with Bayshore Construction for the construction of the Little Papio Channel, Maple to Pratt Street, Keystone Trail Stabilization Project in the bid amount of $43,704, subject to changes deemed necessary by general manager and approval as to form by district legal counsel, and I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Brunwell.
Yes.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Shepherdson.
Yes.
Item 4 is contract with Stantec Consulting Service, Inc. for Papio Hydraulic Modeling. Subcommittee recommends that GM be authorized to waive District Policy 15.2 and execute the proposed contract with Stantec Consulting Services, Inc. for an update of the Papain Creek Watershed Hydraulic Modeling in an amount not to exceed $429,681.81, subject to changes deemed necessary by General Manager and approval as to form by District Legal Counsel, and I so move.
All right, we once again have a motion on the table. Is there anybody in the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? We'll call the motion.
Thompson.
Yes.
Weiss.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Yes.
John
Conley. Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Glenwald.
No.
Jack.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Jefferson.
Yes. Item 5 is the second addendum to the City of Omaha Interlocal Agreement for Papio Watershed Dam Site 15A. Subcommittee recommends the GM be authorized to execute the second addendum to the interlocal agreement with the City of Omaha for Papio Watershed Dam Site 15A, subject to changes deemed necessary by the General Manager and approval as to form by District Legal Counsel, and I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Director Leahy.
I'm going to get on my soapbox again with this one. Again, I appreciate staff getting us the information between Tuesday and Thursday. I mean, that was useful information. I think changes the dynamic of some of this. But there's still an issue that I have with this. One is, I hate when we are put as a board sort of under the gun, if you will, that, hey, we need you to prove this now so we can get moving. If not, it could delay a project by 6 months or something that apparently we've been talking to the city about 4 months, you know, so I think hopefully we can find a way to educate board members prior to when a decision needs to be made, else it could delay something for 6 months, because we certainly don't want to do that for a project as important as this one. Then, you know, partnership that we're in with the city on this, I mean, even the latest information makes me think that the city sometimes tries to bully us around. And I say this as a representative of my district is strictly in the City of Omaha. But when I hear partnership and staff talking about our partnership with the city, I think of the partnership that we have with Papillion and Bellevue and some of their elected officials as a partnership. And sometimes I think the City of Omaha and other entities out there view us more as a piggy bank, not a partner. So this is something that I, again, hope the board keeps in mind for future things that we have to deal with the city in regards to. Again, when talking about thinking things ahead, some of the new information talked about how the City of Omaha maybe didn't even want this service road. I think maybe we could have had some foresight to say, all right, then it's not a part of it from the get-go. Maybe we could have avoided what I think is giving them $135,000. So, said my piece.
Thank you, Director Leahy. Any further comments from directors?
Director Jack, I have to chime in too. Earlier today, we also got an email saying something about the Game and Parks was contributing money toward this. Mm-hmm. And that was really very unclear if they're contributing money toward the road, the permanent road, the temporary access road, or just what is their contribution in this? And does the game, are they interested in getting their money back on this thing?
We worked with the Game and Parks, and Lori contacted them. They are contributing to the access road. It's $125,000.
The temporary or the?
The temporary.
The temporary.
And talking to them, they want to see that. They don't want their money back, but they want to see that road constructed. So they have agreed with us that if we were going to transfer that money to the city, City of Omaha, then it will go toward a road for access. So,
which money are you referring to?
$125,000 from the Nebraska Game Parks Commission.
Okay, for this road.
Yes. It was part of their overall contribution for the fisheries and the boat ramp and the access road. So, if we were to say, no, we're not going to give it to them, then we're not going to give it to the City of Omaha to build the road, then they would want their money back. But since the money is going to construct that road, they're agreeable to give that money to the City of Omaha.
Do we have that money, or do they still have the money?
Well, we have it. It's part of our. It was part of our grant from them, so we have that money now. It's sitting in account for the project.
And if this temporary access road were not to be built, just supposing, mm-hmm. when would the permanent road be built?
right away? I don't know when the permanent road would be able to save them.
There's not a timeline at this point for it.
It could be next year. It could be 10 years. We don't have any idea.
It'll be sooner than later because the SID is going to be responsible for building it. So it'll be sooner than later. But, you know, and to drive...
This temporary road, how long is it going to last?
It won't be constructed.
But you're talking about the permanent fix could be 10 years down the road or whatever?
No, it'll be much shorter. The temporary road, the intent of the temporary road was to provide access to the park area and the lake before the subdivision was even planned.
Okay.
So we had no idea when we planned this, the subdivision was going to be platted there or even come into an existence. So we had to provide access to the facility.
Right.
That's when Game of Parks made that part of their funding to build a boat ramp, provide access to the facility. Now that the SID has platted and they're going to construct, now the city of Omaha wants that particular road to be a city street boulevard and meet all the specifications, which are far more strenuous and expensive than a temporary access road. So that's the issue then, that the temporary access road will not be built because they will want to build the permanent boulevard in its place. So instead of building a temporary access road for a year or 2 years or however long it takes, and then they come in and tear it up, we didn't think that was a very good idea, efficient.
That was kind of my point.
Yeah.
Maybe I misunderstood because I thought we were funding a temporary.
No.
And then they were going to come back in and do the permanent after. Because it didn't make sense.
No. Okay. Yeah, we are not going to build it.
So there is no road.
No. Yeah. There will be no road.
Churchill, you have a follow-up?
Do we know about what this road may look like, this Cleveland Boulevard, as far as will it include maybe a bike lane or sidewalks for the bikes? I mean, does it?
Well, there's trails in the facility. There's trails in the facility, and actually the construction of the trails is part of that. But it'll be a boulevard. It'll be a...
Will this boulevard have bike accessibility? Like, right, the hot word in a lot of planning departments these days is complete streets. And I don't know where the city of Omaha is on their plan, but, you know, I would like to see this road could have an... will it have sidewalks for...
Lori's got information.
So if you're a little bit, like, I didn't know this until we started this project, but HWS Cleveland Boulevard, all the way through the city of Omaha, is actually part of the park system. And so this drawing is a little bit different. This is based on a preliminary layout that we got from the development next door. It shows a pier in the lake. That pier is not going to be constructed at this time. But all those little circles that you see on the pink area there, those are all trees. It will have a full 10-foot trail. It'll be a wider section. The landscaping has a higher standard. It's not necessarily the complete streets with a separate bike lane, but that 10-foot trail is there to take that place.
Does it go street, trees, trail? Or does it go street,
yes,
trails, trees?
No, so it would be street, trees, trail.
Right.
Yeah.
Any further questions from directors?
I appreciate Director Lay's comments because it's kind of like herding cats sometimes with our partners. And Omaha's a little different animal because they're so large. And so you've got several layers of bureaucracy. Papillion, I can call the city administrator and I can get an answer in 2 seconds. Where Omaha, you kind of have to go through the layers to get maybe who has the answer, first of all. And then, but we try to bring it as quickly as we can to you. A lot of times it isn't finalized enough to bring it to you, and it may change. So we could bring you something, say, hey, this is what we're thinking, this is kind of the direction it goes, and then all of a sudden another level of bureaucracy says, no, we're not going to do that. And so we have to rehash the whole process. And so I understand we need to try to get those things out in front better, but sometimes it's very difficult because it changes, and it has to go through their approval process before we can make it. So
that's incredible.
Did you say it's going to go from the Parks Commission to the City of Omaha, then to us, on the flow of on the funds?
No, the City Council approved this.
So for Game and Parks, we get the money from Game and Parks.
So it comes here first.
Yes,
we have it. Yeah.
Yeah, we've been partially reimbursed from. We haven't gotten their final reimbursement, obviously they're going to hold some of those funds to make sure
we're
doing everything we said we would.
So how are we going to get more money out of City Omaha? Because they owe us some more money, don't they?
No. Well, we could ask them. It's an election year. You might see the candidate bribes us.
Any further comments from directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Please.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Brett Huntley.
Aye.
John Huntley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Ryan Wall.
No.
Jeff.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Nice story.
Yes.
Okay, the next item of bids on Chalco Hills Tower Rehabilitation. Subcommittee recommends the general manager be authorized to execute a contract with Elkhorn West Construction in an amount not to exceed $78,500 for the NRC Entry Tower Rehabilitation Project, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approval as to form by district legal counsel. And I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Director Teaser, then we'll get you, Director Reese.
I was going to say, thank you, staff, for having that picture sent out with the windows. Very nice.
Director Reese?
Yeah. It's an awful lot of money for windows. And I'm just having trouble getting my hands around it. Because, we'll say $80,000. I just don't know if there could have been an alternative solution that maybe cheaper that would be more palatable for what we want to do here. I don't know. Has anybody thought about a secondary solution, or is this pretty much what everybody wanted to do?
Randy and I, the architect, looked at a couple options. The architect looked at a couple options and felt this was the most economical, actually. Probably the cheapest, and from the standpoint of long-term maintenance, definitely.
Right. If you wanted to keep the original design and aesthetics and plan of the original building, that was the most economical option. Mm-hmm. Now, if you simply wanted to just throw up some drywall and side the side of it and just kind of close it off, you could do it. You could probably tear down the tower for cheaper. But if you want the building to remain how it was originally designed and intended, that was the least option. And it's more than windows. There's interior trimming, and there's doors and things like that, and ADA accessible type of equipment. So, so if you want to tear it down or drywall it in, and I could get $50 from Jim for caulk, and we could try to caulk it up. I mean, yesterday when it rained, there was water running in into the building. So we have to do something.
There's 32 windows in that structure. It doesn't look like it when you walk up.
I guess my question, and I hate to make a big thing out of this, but it's not really heated or air conditioned. It's open at the bottom. So why are we using such expensive windows on this project when you can probably just do a single pane or double pane, whatever, window, because really you don't care if it holds out hot or cold. It just needs to hold out moisture instead of going and buying these expensive glass curtains.
I think looking at the bids, obviously got a very reasonable price. Mm-hmm. $73,000. The next highest bid was $33,000. As Marlon said, the architect felt like this was the most reasonable, most economical way to go. Plastic and air classes, huge improvements in plastic. So the heating and cooling of that space obviously don't cool it. But with the HVAC, the heat that is that's in there will be replaced.
There is some thermal action there. It isn't like we're keeping it at 72 degrees. Mm-hmm. But you're keeping out some cold in the winter, definitely, by having thermal panes, and you're keeping out
some heat.
except on a sunny day. Heat in the summer.
How old is that? How old is that structure?
30 years.
30 years.
30 years.
Okay, so basically, we didn't have 30-year windows.
Windows on? No, probably not. I don't know if they had their year windows 30 years ago. Well, and obviously, just the systems of a 30-year-old building, for example, you feel it's a little warm in here tonight. Well, I mean, we fight the HVAC system and their old boilers and systems. And so Randy's done a good job of piecing them together to keep them running. But it's a 30-year-old building, and it's just it's time to do some upkeep.
Director Bradley, what's your...
Well, I was just echo what I said Tuesday night, or sort of that theme that we're concerned if we were ever to take a direct hit from a straight line, you know, thunderstorm or something. I know it's just out in the front, but it can still blow glass into the interior. But I was wondering if the new windows or the system, and I'm thinking more efficient glass, they say, will it withstand, say, a hard fastball, you know, when you're getting straight line, just a glare, you know, the getting baseball hail coming sideways. I mean, will it withstand that? The safety.
Right. I don't know what the rating is. Randy, do you know the rating of the...
I do not know the wind rating on that structure, the architect of any consideration. The 6x6 structure that's inside that building, there's room to support that structure. It's past the 6x6. See running up inside.
We can find out what they're rated to. And get
it. I'm thinking the roof could handle it, though, right? Director Thompson, then we'll get Director Lee.
It might go up to $100 in cost.
Okay.
You know, the glass is fine. Yeah, it leaks. When you have a leak in your house, my house is almost 100 years old, and guess what? I use caulk, and I don't think it takes us any special that only 30-year-old windows. I really don't know if anyone got up a ladder to look at where the leak is. If it's talkable, I don't know. But sure, it's easy to call an architect, and a great architect, by the way. I love the design. I don't want it enclosed. I love the lights going up and so on. But I just, you know, I'm having a difficult time approving $78,000.
Director Leahy.
Yeah, how long is this going to take? I mean, when are we going to start? And is it like just a week long job?
Contractor informs us about 4 to 6 weeks lead time to get the windows constructed. So, this week, we're going to be probably in
time. And then it would take 4 to 5 weeks?
4 weeks.
All right. And so, just alternative entrances and exits?
Right. And we will work with anybody that's either renting the building or utilizing the building in any events that we have on the weekends or through the week. But this place in the summer is completely packed. So, we'll make those.
And we're going to be doing it in the summer.
Yeah. Well, yeah, late spring, early spring.
Randy, the current windows that are spec, is there a certain guarantee or warranty on those windows for a certain period of time? Or?
There's 30-year warranty on those.
New ones that...
And that runs...
I didn't understand what Randy said about the length of the construction period.
4 to 6 weeks.
Once they start.
There's a 4 to 5 week lead time to have
right.
Windows constructed. And the contractor is telling me that it's 4 to 5 weeks to complete the project, which our hope is to be done for July 4th for the event.
Thank you.
Any further questions or comments from directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Reinwald.
Yes.
Jeff.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
No.
Please.
No.
Jefferson.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, it's been suggested that we have someone here to make a presentation to item 13 of my subcommittee, and in reference to them.
Item 8 on the board agenda, John. Sorry to interrupt.
I think that's a
move up to that item instead of making them sit through all of the minutiae of budget items.
Completely agree.
Who's going to come ahead and bring that item forward now? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, so this item would be the B-cycle project, and following on the comments from Tuesday night, Our legal staff worked based on the document, the template that we had received from Heartland B-Cycle on setting up a new agreement. I have a copy over here on the overhead. I didn't have paper copies because this has not been fully reviewed, ready for final approval from us. I do have a paper copy if you'd like one, Dr. Connolly. Or is the screen good for you? Or
good for me, yeah.
Okay. So, one second, please. So, based on the comments from Tuesday night, there were several items that we wanted to address. One would be the term of the agreement. The term is 1 year and then would require reapproval by the board after 1 year. Next comment was about the ownership, and this agreement indicates that the district owns the station and the bikes. In the event that Heartland Bike Share were no longer around, those would be returned to the district as district property. The indemnity that was brought up earlier is included in this version of the agreement. Let's see. The user agreement that is required to be signed by all users of the bike share system has been received and looked at by our legal staff, and they feel that that's acceptable and would indicate the responsibility is not left with the district in the event that anything were to happen to either the equipment or to one of the users on the system. That Heartland is responsible for all maintenance on the station itself and the bikes, and that's clear in this agreement. And that Heartland Bike Share retains the revenue, but that there are no operational costs to the district after the initial purchase. So those were our understanding of the questions that were brought up on Tuesday night, and all of those are now included in this five-page agreement that's on the screen. Again, we have this one marked as a draft. We received it back, went through, marked up those few comments specific to the questions from the other night. We feel like this is essentially ready. It needs to go back to Heartland's board for their review, for final approval on their side, so that we can then sign it.
Management also needs to
review. And we need to take one more look under that changes deemed necessary clause. But we feel this addresses all of the questions that were brought up on Tuesday.
Brett, you're okay. You were okay with it, obviously, because you sent it to me.
Yeah. One thing that I would add is the reason it's just 1 year term. Because there was a discussion about the user fee, the subsequent user fee that was kind of open-ended. Under this agreement, there will be no user fee, and they would give an estimate of user fees for subsequent.
Right, which needs to be approved again.
It's not yeah, it'll be approved before next year.
And there's 8 bikes, not 11.
Yes.
Right? And we get our name on them.
Yes.
That's all I care about.
Before we open up discussion, Director Connolly, could you bring the motion forward to the full board, please?
If I could find it, yes. There it is. Okay. We only have 28 pages of the green sheets tonight. Item 8, recommendation that the Board of Directors approve the purchase of equipment in the amount of $35,540 and to authorize the General Manager to sign an agreement with Heartland B-Cycle for operation of a bicycle sharing station located at Chalco Hills, all subject to changes deemed necessary by the General Manager and approval as informed by District Legal Counsel, and I so move.
We now have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff? Marlon?
I do have one other comment I'd like to make. I haven't really had a chance to really look through the whole agreement. But I do notice one item that it may be a problem, it may not, but it says that the NRD is the owner of this land, and we are not. We only lease the property. I don't know if that's a problem for B-Cycle. We lease it from the Corps. We may need to get approval from the Corps to put the facility. Well, what a product.
Obviously.
So there's a couple of little details here that we need to iron out.
I don't think, well, we can handle that.
I don't think that's going to be a problem.
Dr. Conley.
I've got a question. Your literature showed a bunch of sponsors. Do we qualify to get listed as a sponsorship?
Yes.
After we pay this money?
Absolutely. With the purchase of the equipment comes 3 years of sponsorship recognition on the equipment. So the station here, as well as the 8 bikes, will be Papio NRD branded, however you guys see fit.
No, I was thinking more your literature. You have a list of companies as sponsoring. Do we qualify for that too when you reprint your literature?
I believe on our website. Yeah, we would absolutely add you guys to
okay.
that list.
Thank you.
Director Thompson.
I can't remember when someone steals a bike, what happens?
Rarely happens. No, we really don't have a huge theft problem, but if, you know, we'll notice if a bike has been gone for more than 24 hours, and then we follow up with those users, call them. If we can't get a hold of them, we charge them for the value of the bike, which usually gets their attention if they somehow forgot where they put it. And then other than that, what we found is bikes that are taken mostly tend to be on stolen credit cards. And then even in those situations, they are pretty identifiable and they come back to us. So right now, with the life of our program, 6.5 years, we have one missing bike currently that's been gone since October. So it's really like, it's just not, it has not been a problem for us. And we are fully confident that we will see the one bike that's missing return eventually.
Director Lee.
Yeah. Again, big credit to the staff and the district legal counsel for turning again all these requests around in new contract in a matter of a couple of days. I was a little surprised that folks wanted it turned around that fast, because we always have that subject to changes deemed necessary by general manager approval as to form by district legal counsel. So I always trust that they're going to do what's in the best interest of the NRD legally when it comes to contracts like this. I am very much in support of this, and I hope that it does turn out well for us and B-Cycle, because I would like to see us put sites like this up on Prairie Queen, the M-Site 15A, 6 and 7, and wherever else that we can do that makes sense for B-Cycle and ourselves. So I appreciate this coming to the board. Again, very much in support and credit to the staff.
Director Bradley, then we'll get you, Director Spreadcom.
Just thought, can you put a chip in the bike?
Yeah, no, absolutely we can. So,
how expensive might that be?
Yeah, so I actually know the answer to this question. It's $200 extra up front for the bike, for the computer. And then it's, it's $8 a month, $4 to $8 a month for each bike. And so our total cost for our system would be $8,000 a year. And since we're not really losing bikes frequently, we've chosen not to do that because it's not, we don't really need that theft deterrent. And then about half of our bikes have passive GPS in them. So we get a good sense of what our aggregate data is from that, where people are riding generally.
George Fredcom.
Well, the other night, the big question really was is whether we were going to provide ongoing financial support. Mm-hmm. And I assume you answered, I didn't quite understand. Did you answer that or?
Yes, this agreement does have Section 10 retention of monies, and Heartland Bike Share will retain all monies generated by the station, but then there is no ongoing operational cost to the district.
Now, this is only a one-year agreement.
Right? Yeah, right.
Correct.
Now, what happens at the end of the 1 year? They come back to the board for this?
If there's no changes on either side, we would probably just change the date and sign a new agreement, but if changes were deemed necessary, we would present a new agreement.
So the issue of ongoing support would come back up.
Yeah.
Or you
would come back before you regardless.
Or you would agree not to do anything. Right. Regardless.
There is a maintenance fee of $100 per bike, but that is offset by pass sales. So we'll know first year of how much these bikes get used. So you could pay zero or maintenance, or you could pay $800. So assuming nobody rides them out here.
Yeah. No one ever uses them. Right. And then if that's the case, we can have a different conversation at this time.
Or maybe it's $100. For maintenance. So.
Okay. Now, the other question I have has to do with what Marlon said about we only lease the land. And is this subject to who is the entity that owns the property?
The Corps.
Is this subject to them approving the use?
We'll talk to them. Typically, we have done improvements to the site that they typically approve. I mean, we have a bike rack out here in front that probably we should have got their permission. And I don't know if we did, but... So they're typically easy to work. We're providing a recreational opportunity for people.
Okay. Is it okay? My question, is it all right? We're not the property owner to the bike?
Absolutely. We deal with all different types of property owners, and it's not a huge issue for us. And we have at least one station on core property right now. So.
Okay. Director Leahy, then we'll give you Director Leahy.
You're probably going to have to, the core is probably going to want to be added on to that that hold harmless, because technically they're another party that's not really a party of what we're doing. So technically there might be a loophole where they could get sued, since technically we're just leasing the property. But I think to solve all the issues,
If we just say, we'll list you on the hold harmless, then they probably would not have a problem with it.
We'll run that all by then when we get approved.
Okay.
If the court does have a problem with it, I think then we should also run the window thing past them, and then just every other minute thing that we do to our facilities until they no longer have a problem.
We own the building.
Okay. But it's not the land.
And they pay rent. So we can work that out somehow.
Yeah, there's a repair station out here, too. Bicycle repair.
Yes, they typically don't.
Yeah. Any further comments from directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Brett Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Funwell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Lake.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yeah.
Thompson.
Yes.
Keith.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Now, if I can get back to my agenda here.
Number 7.
What page are we on?
You do page 27.
Here we go. It's upside down. All right. We're now going on to the urban cost share program. So item 7A, urban conservation assistance program. The subcommittee recommends that the applications from Bennington for $30,000, Omaha for $30,000, and $30,000. SID 190 for $30,000, SID 221 for $30,000, and SID 225 for $30,000, for a total of $180,000, be approved, subject to funding in the FY 2018 budget. And I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff? Directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Runwell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Brett Conley.
Aye.
Chairperson.
Yes.
Item 7B is urban drainage way program. The subcommittee recommends the application from Omaha for $120,000 and South Sioux City for $487,480 for a total of $567,480. Be approved, subject to funding in the FY 2018 budget, and I so move.
Once again, I have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or director? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Fowler.
Yes.
Runwell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Brett Conley.
Hi.
John Conley.
Yes.
Chairperson.
Yes.
Item 7C, Recreation Area Development Program. Subcommittee recommends the applications from Bennington for $50,000, Blair for $13,000, and $50,000. Omaha for $16,210, $39,000, and $50,000. We're paying for $50,000, South Sioux City for $30,929, and Valley for $7,225, for a total of $306,364. Be approved, subject to funding in the FY 2018 budget, and I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Reinhold.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Leahy.
Yes.
Caesar.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Brett Conley.
Hey.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Shepherd.
Yes.
Item D, Trails Assistance. Recommendation that the applications for Omaha for $34,500, $83,612, and $18,732. Sarpy County for $93,750. SID 506 for $400,000. South Sioux City for $56,356. And Tecamer for $36,410. For a total of $723,360. Be approved, subject to funding in the FY 2016 budget, and I so move.
We have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or director, Director Leahy.
Yeah, I have a question about that SID 506 one, or a couple questions. The SID is putting up the other $400,000?
Yes.
Okay. Do we know, have they gone to, I mean, there's other programs out there in Douglas County and other funds, have they try to seek out any other assistance for this?
They have not yet. They received the call for projects or the call for applications, and so their project is pretty preliminary right now, which is why the map is pretty straightforward. We just received the one overview plan and the pretty round number. We would expect some, as you mentioned on Tuesday, some pencil sharpening on that project as we move forward. So they probably will look for other funding opportunities. We can help them with that. Since this is a portion of the main trail system, the West Papio Trail, it's one we're particularly interested in because we've spent, along with Omaha, quite a bit of time and money on the rest of this main branch trail. So the fact that the SID has to construct it, they would be the lead on it, but I'm sure that both parks and I would be involved in most of the discussions there. So we can help them move forward with that project.
Okay, couple more questions. When is Dam Site 15A going to be complete? Like, not just complete as a flood control structure, but the park opened and the trails and, you know, that boulevard, all that?
We're anticipating next spring.
Okay. When will they start there?
Their application said by fall of 2018. I would expect that to be more aggressive than we would think appropriate, especially because funding is not finalized until September of 2017. So they said fall of 2017, which is right at the start of our fiscal year. So I would think that they would probably work on it through the fall, bid at the end of the fall, and look to construction in the spring. That's how we've had success on trail projects in the past, and we would probably encourage them to do that. If they want to be more aggressive and they want to try and construct in the fall for some reason, by all means they could, but I think we'll probably recommend that they do construction starting March of 2018. So it would be done by about April or May when people start coming to 15A as it's open.
It would only take a few months?
Yeah, this is a pretty straightforward project. It's it'll be easy access from both sides. It's just pouring concrete. There's no additional facilities. They do have the one bridge. That'll be a prefab bridge. They'll just drop it in place on abutments. It'll be poured. So it should be pretty straightforward.
And then I guess this is just sort of maybe a recommendation for staff as Eric's having these conversations because I think even $200,000 would be pretty generous to this SID, 25% of a cost share. I'm not going to take it out now because it sounds like they do have some work to do. But when you are having conversations with them or staff does, maybe we should let them know that that $400,000 isn't very solid. I mean, I have my eye on this come budget time when we're going to need some $200,000. And I have some ideas that maybe I can put together between now and budget time for that $200,000. That's not to say maybe, I don't know if we can do $200,000 now and then $200,000 next fiscal year and reimburse them after they put in the trail, or I'm open to that kind of conversation, but I just think, let's be respectful of them and encourage them. You may want to seek some other funding sources for that other $200,000 because that may not be there.
On their original cost breakdown, they showed $200,000 as the cost of the bridge from the right bank or the southwest side from SID 471 over to the main trail on SID 506. I would expect that 506 will talk to 471 because the construction of the trail does not require that bridge. That's mostly a benefit to 471. So I would think that 506 will say, why don't you guys get involved in this project, probably specifically towards the bridge cost. We'll work on the trail cost. So I wouldn't be surprised if we end up with some kind of a multi-party agreement here that does include that other SID.
I just don't want them to split up their $400,000 and we're still doing $400,000
right,
with the matching. So I just, to staff, $200,000 in my bullseye.
Director Thompson?
Just a comment. We were talking about cost of trails. I'm guessing this is assumed a 10-foot trail.
Yes.
And it's more recreation, I suppose, a transportation order for a trail.
Well, it's on the West Papio main branch trail, and it goes to 15A. So,
where I'm going with this is, in the past, we've built 8-foot wide trails, which obviously costs less money. And whether it's being candid, if it becomes a cost issue, consider 8-foot versus 10-foot. We can still get by with the 8-foot trail in most situations. It's not ideal, but if it's a pinch and money for both parties, then
yeah. Just contractually, are they obligated to begin or have it done by a certain time?
They are not. We usually ask them to apply in a timeline where they would be able to complete within the fiscal year that they're applying into, meaning by submit reimbursement requests by June 1 of 2018 within that fiscal 2018. So we would expect that they would be done by that time. This project seems like the scope should fit pretty well into that timeline.
Do we disperse the money
At the conclusion. Yep, they get a letter from their engineer on all of these projects with substantial completion. We receive photos. Sometimes we do site visits before we do reimbursement.
Operationally, we've really tightened the timeline for these projects, these cost shares. If they're not done, and if we say, when will you start? And if they say, we don't know, we withdraw the funds and we tell them you need to reapply. Yeah.
Right.
Director Kama.
In view of what was said about the bridge not really being part of the SID, it's connecting another SID into the trail. I would think it would be prudent to cut this down for the SID, give them what they need, and have the other SID apply for funding for the bridge. This idea of running from one SID into another one to have funding going through multiple hands doesn't make very good sense.
So the cost of installing the bridge at the same time of the trail is going to be significantly lower than having a separate project. This is similar to the Daniel Trail, which we worked on with Sarpy, Bellevue, and three SIDs. It involved two bridges just like this to get from one SID to another and over towards the Keystone Trail. So I think they'd have the best luck in most cost-effective bidding by doing one project, which does include all of it. Again, we'll have updates, and by the time we come to budgeting, even in July, we should know quite a bit more about the scope, have seen some plans, and know whether or not the dollar amount is exactly. It won't exceed what we've got here. But we should know quite a bit more.
We can adjust it accordingly. But we've got until September, actually, too.
That's fine. Thank you.
Is this other SID obligated then to build the trail?
That's a little uncertain. That's part of an SID agreement.
Otherwise,
that
we're building a trail to nowhere, aren't we?
this one does. Well, the section on the east or the left bank does go from the existing trail by 160 under 168th up to the south side of Fort, which will then go under eventually and into 15A. So that portion is the core portion of the trail. The bridge is an additional benefit. That's why I mentioned that 471 will probably be involved in the discussion. And again, by July, we should be able to make any updates there and potentially rediscuss that during budget time.
But did the Corps give us approval?
That's actually from Director Thompson. No, I should try to do on that. Yeah.
Hey, it'd be nice now. All right, any further legitimate comments from directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Peter.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
John
Conley. Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Redwall.
Yes.
And
Chairperson.
Yes.
Item E is a Lake Dredging Program. Subcommittee recommends that the applications from Omaha for $99,387 and SID 439 for $50,000 for a total of $149,387 be approved, subject to funding in the FY 2018 budget. I move approval.
All right, we once again have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Thank you.
Yes.
Peter.
Yes.
Thompson.
Yes.
Weiss.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Runwald.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Item F is Flood Mitigation Assistance Program. Subcommittee voted not to approve the cost share application submitted by Douglas County for $63,427. That concludes my report.
I'd like to ask for reconsideration.
Yes, Director Conley. Fred Conley.
I want to ask for reconsideration on that. Right.
Second.
Oh, because of...
So are you making a motion?
Yeah, motion to reconsider.
I think we ought to have more information. What are we being asked to reapprove?
We have additional information on it, reconsideration.
Okay.
I'll walk in here.
So you're making a motion to approve. What was?
Well, it wasn't approved by the committee. I'm asking for reconsideration of what happened.
Okay. Right? And we have a second on the motion.
Correct.
Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak? Staff, directors, staff, or Eric.
Yes. Later this afternoon, I received an email update from Dan Kudelek from Douglas County. A copy has been placed on the table for each of you. On Tuesday night, we mentioned that they would be discussing with the local residents about this project. They had that meeting last evening. About 35 people attended, all expressed concern about the water damage they were experiencing and the impassability of the roads. Douglas County presented the four options and made the recommendation that matched the request that they had submitted, and we had recommended for the flood mitigation assistance program that would be the open ditch style drainage system here. So Douglas County then presented that. It seemed like all of the residents were on board and were interested in seeing a project completed here to avoid the issues they've been having, particularly last year with the amount of water they were seeing in basements. One other update is that Douglas County reevaluated where the project would be constructed. The ditches and culverts would be entirely within the county right-of-way for the road on 225th Street. So Douglas County intends to fund from their general fund or engineering fund their half of the project. They do not intend to ask for a special assessment on the local residents for the work here because it's beneficial to the road and general transportation through here. So that's slightly different than what was presented on Tuesday. It would be the 50-50 cost share would be 50% from the district, as indicated, and then Douglas County does intend to fund their half from their own funds rather than assessing special assessing on the Elk City area. So those two changes from what was discussed on Tuesday, and that's included in the email that Dan sent.
Thank you, Eric. Marlon, you have a follow-up?
Yes, I think you have a program. There are guidelines to that program, the flood mitigation assistance. This this is a perfect example of what would fit in that program. There's nothing here that would make it ineligible for this funding. It's a worthwhile project, and I think it's something that you ought to put.
Thank you, Ron. Any comments or questions from directors? Director Jack.
So am I right to understand that the actual residents who will be benefiting from this are paying nothing?
Not directly. That Douglas County had discussed a special assessment only in that area. Now it would be from Douglas County funds in general.
Although they pay Douglas County tax. I mean, that's their
And that's because the work is in the right-of-way, and from Douglas County's perspective, it's mostly to maintain the road being open during rain events where it previously would be impassable due to the water.
The actual major problem is in the right-of-way? Is that where the problem is?
The construction would be entirely within the right-of-way. I think that driveway accesses currently are in the right-of-way but are utilized privately, but all of the construction would be in the right-of-way, which is why they intend to do it as a public benefit type project, meaning general funding, not special assessment funding.
I think every county road you go down, there's a road ditch. This one doesn't have one. Right. It should have.
Mm-hmm. Director Teaser?
I was just going to ask, is there a particular drainage way that it will lead to? Or?
Yes, this is a very unusual part. This is literally the very absolute top of the watershed. So 225th Street represents the break into the Papio watershed to the east. So the ditches on the east side would be outletted and through some field area through an existing drainage swale and down into the Papio watershed. On the west side, it would outlet to the south, again, across an existing field drainage down into some existing drainage ways that make it down into the Elkhorn River. So you don't often see a break like that and have one project that's on both sides of the divide. It's a very interesting location, but yes, it breaks both directions and would outlet to the south in both directions through fields through existing drainage swales.
Thank you.
Director John Conley.
Does this need to be reworded it so that Douglas County is the applicant?
Are they not?
They are the applicant. They were the applicant.
They are the applicant? I thought it was Elk City.
They're not incorporated. They can't.
Yeah. But I don't think Douglas County was shown on anything. Name was shown on what I saw.
It's called
the resolution.
Yeah. It's called the. It's listed as Douglas County as a sponsor, and the project title was listed as Elk City Drainage Improvements. Elk City is not technically a place, so it's
legally.
It's a weird thing. It was a city. It is no longer a city. So it's more like a neighborhood designation.
Yeah. So the applicant is Douglas County.
Correct. Correct. But, yeah. I'm sorry, Director Teaser, I hope that didn't offend anyone.
All right, Director Thompson.
You said Douglas County agreed to fund 50%. Now, not seeing the original application, but the description here said, oh, residents are going to help with their own whatever equipment they have to fix it. So what the heck dollar amount are we talking about?
The project, the Project scope remains the same. The $126,854 that was listed on the application is still the expected total cost for the project. Bill, do you have that PDF? It's page 182.
The resident question is they are going to do some shaping of their own properties,
right?
To better drain their own property, so no one's paying for that with them. So they're trying to improve the drainage on their individual lot.
Does this application include their consultant? Who's their consultant?
I don't know who the engineer is, if they have one.
They do. I think TD Squared is the engineer on this one, and they. Dan indicated that they were looking to move from 30% plans, which is what they considered the plan set that was attached to the application, moving to 60% plans, so more like preliminary construction documents. If you scroll down a little bit on the bottom half of this page, 126,854 was their cost estimate from the 30% plan set. Ours would be capped at that 63,427, so in case things change, ours is still capped based on what's approved here. That would be what we'd put into the budget and recommend.
It could be less, especially if county uses their own equipment.
It could. Yes, we.
I heard a yes.
The program doesn't allow that.
Yeah, we don't.
Does
we don't
allow them to use their own equipment.
Mm-hmm. Not on that right away project, and they can use it on their own yard.
It's hard to administer a program when they use their own equipment and
right. People. Right. So
what
so
do you
this
charge?
Is. Yeah.
How much does it cost?
Well, that's my point.
We make it.
They got equipment to do this,
your
right?
Your program checks requires a contract. Ditch.
Yeah. So we don't reimburse on self-perform projects.
Well,
we just got to
worry about it. I'm worried about everything they do, okay? So especially before that.
I hope not.
All right, Jenny. Any further comments from directors?
Brent, a question. The subcommittee has a motion as automatic as approved. That's an automatic second. But then Director Conley made a motion to reconsider, seconded by Director Bradley. Do we vote on the motion to reconsider and then another substitute motion if people want to approve it or not approve it?
I think you would vote first on the motion to reconsider, and then there would have to be a substitute.
Okay. Right. Just want to get it correct on that.
Okay. All right, any further?
Motion to reconsider.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Questions or comments on motion to reconsider?
I have a question of procedure. If you had to be on one side of the motion to be asked for reconsideration, was Director Fred Conley on the...
That's only in the board meeting. Subcommittee meeting, that doesn't apply. It would have to be a vote of the board.
Okay, thank
not
you.
Not of the subcommittee.
Okay.
Right. Seeing no questions, roll call on the motion to reconsider.
Yes.
Johnson.
No.
Please.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred
Conley.
Aye. John
Conley.
Yes.
Bowling.
Yes.
Yes.
Leahy. Yes.
Motion
to approve.
All right, we have a motion to approve and second. Any questions or comments from the public, staff, or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion to approve.
Director Bradley.
Johnson.
No.
Please.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler.
Yes.
Brenwell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Director Conley. He's up again. Yes, moving on to agenda item number 10, Treasurer's Report. Once again, Director John Conley.
The Treasurer's Report consists of two resolutions and specifically approval of items 10A through 10I, and I move their approval.
Second. All right, we have a motion on the table. Is there anybody from the public that wishes to speak to this item? Staff or directors? Seeing none, roll call on the motion.
Yes.
Bradley.
Yes.
Fred Conley.
Aye.
John Conley.
Yes.
Fowler. Fowler.
Yes.
Reinwald.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Lakey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
That concludes my report.
Thank you, Director Connolly. Moving on to agenda item legal update. I don't believe we have an update this evening from legal counsel, so we'll move right along to the chairperson's report. Agenda item 12A, the NRD annual conference at Washington, D.C. Director Thompson and I were fortunate enough to go, so I'll give a few brief highlights on that as the hour's getting late. We did get to meet and hear from Chris Pauling and Steve Sokin from the Corps of Engineers. One of the things he mentioned is that WOTUS is pretty much dead. It's hung up in the courts. There's about 33 states that have filed lawsuit against it. So it is on its way out. And if anybody sees any aspects of WOTUS being used, to contact Congressman Don Bacon as soon as possible. In addition to that, there was some concern with budget cuts that the Corps of Engineers could be seeing a cut by potentially up to 16%. A little bit later, we also heard from Kevin Wickley from the NRCS and USDA update. And he had mentioned that there are almost 80 million acres in conservation stewardship program right now. And even at 80 million acres, they're only issuing about half of those, half the applicants get funded. So it's in high demand. So they're trying to figure out a better way to help with that and get more farmers involved. And they do realize that there's some farmers that only are looking for technical assistance. So they're trying to figure out how they can do that to allow technical assistance, help more people, and not just focus on the pure acreage from that standpoint. That being said, there was also a lot of discussion about just water resources. We've been very, very fortunate for quite some time as a country to not be struggling with water resources. So it's kind of in the back of people's minds at best. And it's something that said that we need to have a sense of urgency and make sure that people are aware of that throughout the community. And I know that everybody in this room is aware of that. So hopefully we can get that education out. And then same with the conservation side of things. Many people don't remember the Dust Bowl and what happened there in the 1920s and 30s. And so that's another thing that we're fortunate to where the conservation services have really helped with that. And we want to make sure that, again, that's something that people are aware of. Be aware of history so that we can be ready for the future. And with that, I will pass it on to Director Jim Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Took a couple of points away. I want to add the Kevin Wickey said that there are 12 states, and I don't know the exact application you mentioned, but 12 states in the central region, 7 of the top 10 applications in the central region, I'm sorry. Nebraska is the fourth largest in the nation for applications on conservation efforts. I didn't realize that. And they're recreating the design on terraces using LIDAR. And that's, you know, it's like we saw earlier with helicopters. Technology coming today, just simple terraces. Maybe they're not simple, I don't know, but using other techniques is great. The skinny budget, they use that term. I had not heard it before, but USDA is slated for a 21% cut, EPA 31% cut in their budget. And skinny means they throw it out, see what happens, and they're going to beef it up as they get closer to having an actual budget or through Congress. The farm bill is starting to be discussed, even though it's not expiring until 2018. There's already hearings on it. When you talk about best management practices, those who've been in the business, those are out. Site-specific projects will be looked at. So we always know this is best management practice. Well, no, you got to be specific on what you're doing. I don't know if that's normal or not, but that's one thing this Tom Christensen from NRCS identified. The watershed, Jimmy Bramblett, if I got that right, Deputy Chief for Science and Technology, NRCS, USDA. Boy, that name tag was this long. Scientific Integrity Officer, he talked about watershed programs that now will be looked at, and maybe they have in the past, but he emphasized an economic benefit. And I think our dams, as General Manager Winkler talked about, the economic benefits of reduced flood insurance, all these watershed programs across the country, that's part of the equation. That's part of what really happens with these tremendous watershed programs that we can get in place. TransCanada folks were there talking about the pipeline. The RNRD is silent on that, as it should be. One comment that some farmer said to wherever this was, that I sold my land and I got it back, as obviously it was a sales pitch to get the TransCanada built. So, okay, good for that farmer. Project coordinator for 25 by 2025. That's get renewable energy being 25% of our consumption of energy in the United States. We're getting close. We're only at 10.93% in 2015. There's a lot more room for hydrology, wind, biomass energy, and solar. So there's a lot more room, but it's not gone away. Good opportunity to hear these folks directly involved in the trenches. A lot of nervousness going on with what President Trump is doing, and that's not news to anyone, but you hear directly in Washington. But thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you, Director Thompson. Moving on to 12B, reschedule the May subcommittee meeting to Tuesday, May 9th.
We need to make a motion on that, or are we just
no? Good
to
go? It's good to go. Nobody has to shoot. All right, is everybody good? I know
it's our usual meeting night, but the Omaha election is Tuesday, and obviously none of our directors are running for any seats in the Omaha election, so there will be minimal disruption here. So we thought we could have it on our normal night. So
actually, we're not rescheduling that. No, is that what you're saying?
Correct. No, we're keeping it on Tuesday.
Thank you.
But it will be Tuesday night.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Seeing nothing there. One last comment. I've been accepted to the Air War College that the general manager, John Winkler, was able to attend last year, the National Security Forum. So I'm very honored to have that opportunity, and want to thank John for suggesting putting my name in the hat. I'm very excited to go next month. So I will not be here for subcommittee or the board meeting next month, but I'm very much looking forward to bringing back what I learned from that. I've heard it's quite an eye-opening experience and looking at the world a little bit differently, so I'm looking forward to that opportunity.
You pass a background check, so you must be. Secretary of the Air Force, actually.
All right. With that concludes my report. We'll move on to agenda item 13, the General Manager's Report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will not go through the information education report and the other reports that are attached, the partnership report and the ongoing projects with the district legal counsel. We have a number of personnel miscellaneous items. We did hire a new surveyor, GIS tech, Sean French, and he was hired by the district and started April 10th. He holds several degrees, several certifications, very qualified individuals. So we expect good things from him. We did receive correspondence from Bitco Insurance regarding a field operations survey along Thompson Creek. And the focus of the survey was to determine hazards regarding construction equipment, falls off equipment, traffic patterns, other general liability exposure. And Pat McAvoy did a great job assisting with that. We also have been notified that we, again, are one of the safest companies in the greater Omaha area. We will be recognized with the Award of Distinction at the Greater Omaha Chapter of the National Safety Council Awards on May 24th. So anyone interested in attending that, please forward that. We'll also send out a note. Nicole, how many years in a row is that now that we've...
This is our
9th or 10th. Okay.
Is that the...
Right.
Is that the Golden Band-Aid Award?
You know. Also, I'd like to commend Nicole for our... she's our safety coordinator. And then thank the members of the NRD Safety Committee. Michael Grube, Austin Hill, Lori Laster, Pat McAvoy, DJ Reese, Terry Schumacher, and Deb Ward. They do a great job, and that's one of the reasons why we get nominated for those awards that many years in a row. Omaha Magazine Family Guide has published an exemplary educator article on the district's environmental education program entitled Austin Hill, Wild About Teaching Kids to Be Wild.
Austin, you want to stand up and... Austin has been with the district for 7 years and has continued to do an excellent job in environmental education. And every either administrator or teacher that ever calls or I talk to that Austin has presented, they have nothing but great things to say about him and the program. So we really appreciate you doing that. So I'm glad you're being recognized too outside of the district. So keep up the good work. We do have some correspondence from Olson Associates regarding an update to their groundwater management plan and then fire engineering regarding the Missouri River levee system fee status. They're attached for your review, so those will be brought to you sometime in the future, but we wanted to give everybody a heads up that that will be coming. And last but not least, Emmett Egger, could you please stand? After 40 years as the district education coordinator, Emmett is retiring from his position on May 5th. And so Emmett started his career with the district in 76, and he's the second information education coordinator that the district has ever had. He obviously initiated several programs, received numerous NACD newsletter awards. He's the former president of the Nebraska chapter of the Public Relations Society of America. And under his leadership, district influence led several districts across the state in their informational education campaigns, website, social media, and programming. He is most proud of his television informational campaigns that he produced for the district. And I think he's looking forward to some fishing and traveling with his wife, Barbara. And so we wish Emmett all the best. And we're going to have a parting, meal, luncheon for Emmett. But we want to thank him for all of his work and all of his service. It's been a pleasure working with you. So. And Mr. Klug stole my report on his activities with the government.
Sorry,
pass your background check. And that concludes my report.
How well did I pass the background
check? I don't know.
It's well enough. Do we know when the luncheon will be?
Yeah, we do. We'll send that out as well. So anybody that wants to attend that. I just don't have a top of my head. I know it is. But we'll send you the safety committee or the safety award luncheon and then also the luncheon for Emmett's retirement.
Congratulations, Emmett. Lastly, we have informational items. Earth Day is being celebrated on April 22nd. As I understand it, a few of our directors may be taking their soapbox on the road with them, so be sure to go see them down at Elmwood Park. other than that, their next board meeting is on May 11th, right here. With that, we are adjourned.